Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 22nd, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Melissa Topshire with today's headlines. The UN approves a global AI resolution.
EU leaders discuss using profits from frozen Russian assets to arm Ukraine.
The U.S. sues Apple for allegedly exploiting an illegal monopoly.
A U.S. admiral says China will be ready to invade Taiwan by 2027.
Portugal's center-right leader Luis Montenegro is nominated as prime minister.
The U.S. is reportedly considering a plea deal offer for Julian Assange.
Reddit goes public.
Microsoft hires DeepMind's co-founder to lead its new AI division.
The Biden administration unveils strict car emission limits.
And a study warns that nearly every country's population will shrink by the year 2100.
The UN unanimously passes an AI resolution. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Foreign Policy, and Axios. After 3 months of negotiations, the first ever UN resolution on artificial intelligence has passed. It states that improper or malicious design, development, deployment, and use of AI poses risks to human rights. The document, which was approved by all 193 UN member states, does not mention the use of AI for military purposes. While not binding, the resolution was proposed by the U.S. and co-sponsored by China alongside 121 other countries. The U.S., the U.K., and over 12 other nations first proposed an international agreement in November to ensure AI is secure by design. Throughout the negotiation process, developing countries fought to include the risks AI poses to jobs as well, centering the need for electronic infrastructure to ensure fair access to new AI technologies. This follows multiple international AI discussions over the past year or more, including the G7 summit in Japan, the AI summit in the UK, and recently enacted AI regulation in the EU and China. Despite the consensus on an AI resolution at the UN, other issues, such as crimes against humanity and cybercrime, have been more divisive among Western states, Russia, and China.
Thank you, Melissa, for laying out the facts on our first story today. We're going to start the spins with a pro-establishment narrative, and it's provided by FedScoop. The international community has rightly aligned itself with the U.S. on this issue on behalf of a truly rules-based order. After months of negotiations and collaborative edits, the first-of-its-kind resolution not only calls for security and privacy measures, but also uses AI as a means of enhancing wealth, education, healthcare, and environmental sustainability around the world.
And Common Dreams brings us an establishment critical narrative. International AI resolutions won't mean much until governments agree not to use this technology for military purposes. Powerful governments like the U.S. have already begun creating autonomous weapons, efforts that place everyone in grave danger. If the UN wants to show good faith to the world, it should restrict the use of autonomous weapons and prohibit the integration of this software into nuclear bombs.
The Metaculous Prediction Community are going to get things started on our first story today. They've got a nerd narrative that thinks that there's a 50% chance that if there's an AI catastrophe this century, it will happen by December of 2035.
So random.
and if it doesn't, Metaculous is going to make sure it happens by December of 2035.
Oh, no, they're 50-50.
Oh, they're 50-50.
Well, straight down the line.
It depends. They're trying to get people on a list. They're about halfway there. So.
Okay, a little bit of work to do then. Yeah.
European Union leaders are discussing using profits from frozen Russian assets to arm Ukraine. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Associated Press, Politico, and Guardian. Leaders of EU member states on Thursday discussed a plan to use billions of euros of profits from frozen Russian assets to buy weapons and ammunition for Ukraine. The plan seeks to use the interest earned from an estimated 200 billion euros, or 217 billion US dollars, of assets belonging to Russia's central bank, frozen in a Belgian bank after the onset of Russia's war with Ukraine, and use it to plug the gap from the stall in U.S. spending. The interest is expected to raise €3 billion, roughly $3.3 billion annually. The initiative is different from a push by U.S. officials that seeks to get the EU to use the entirety of the confiscated Russian funds for military spending on Ukraine. According to reporting from Politico, European capitals have shied away from this idea because of legal and financial risks. However, the EU pressed ahead with plans to use the interest accumulated from these funds. According to reporting from AP, the EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, got the green light for the plans from most of the bloc's foreign ministers ahead of Thursday's meeting. EU leaders in Brussels will also look to formally put the bloc on a so-called war footing. The move will seek to ramp up European arms production in the case of a wider conflict with Russia. In a letter sent to attendees prior to Thursday's meeting, EU Council President Charles Michel said, "Now that we are facing the biggest security threat since the Second World War, it is high time we take radical and concrete steps to be defense-ready and put the EU's economy on a war footing."
Thank you, Adam. We'll start these spins with a pro-establishment narrative from Euronews. The EU is prepared to continue to keep pressure on Russia and hold the Kremlin accountable for its illegal acts of aggression and the massive suffering and damage it has inflicted. These funds are needed to protect the future of Ukraine, and if we deprive them of the weapons they need, Putin and Russia won't stop there.
TASS is going to counter that with the pro-Russia narrative. This is banditry and theft, pure and simple. The proposed step of using revenue from Russia's assets to arm Ukraine in the conflict is yet another example of how the EU is degrading its own standards and violating its commitments to international law.
And there's a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 27% chance that Ukraine will join the EU before 2030. You know, Adam, that's a problem with these big countries. That's why I keep my country's money in a hole in the ground in my backyard.
You're not getting any interest, though. Then you won't have any interest to spend on other wars. Maybe like a Roth or a some sort of IRA, you know, anyway, but maybe a 401k.
Yeah, but then they can freeze it. That's the risk you take.
But you got to put it overseas.
Okay.
Your other country's assets in another country.
Okay. Then I will put them in another country's hole in the ground. There we go.
Okay. All right. That's a good compromise.
Yeah.
Good job, Melissa. We've been talking about that. You're making progress.
Thank you. In our next story, the U.S. sues Apple for an illegal monopoly over smartphones. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Wall Street Journal, The Associated Press, The New York Post, Verge, The Independent, and Reuters. The U.S. Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against Apple in a New Jersey federal court on Thursday for allegedly abusing its dominance in the smartphone market to artificially drive prices up for consumers and box out competitors. According to the complaint, the tech giant restricts the functionality of non-Apple devices and access to contactless payment for third-party digital wallets, while refusing to allow its iMessage app to exchange messages with competing platforms. This is reportedly the most pivotal legal action by the Justice Department against the Cupertino, California-based company that has nearly a two-thirds share of smartphone sales in the U.S. in Q4 2023 to date. Apple argues that the lawsuit, if successful, would affect its ability to create products that people expect from the company and also set a dangerous precedent for government officials to shape users' technology. This comes as the Biden administration has ramped up efforts to enforce antitrust statutes against tech giants, filing lawsuits against Google and Amazon, and attempting to block acquisitions by Meta and Microsoft. Meanwhile, Meta, Microsoft, X, formerly Twitter, and Match Group joined on Wednesday a protest from video games maker Epic Games that claims Apple has violated a court-ordered injunction regarding payments in its App Store, which stems from their ongoing legal battle.
Thanks for the facts, Melissa. The spins are going to start with a pro-establishment narrative provided by Washington Post. It takes only an Apple device and another from a competitor to verify that allegations in this lawsuit are true. While Apple has claimed that these limitations are in place to protect the consumer's privacy and security, the company actually makes chat messages less secure and functional. Additionally, consumers aren't allowed to download innovative apps, including games and payment services. This lawsuit is crucial to better regulating big tech.
And here's the establishment critical narrative from Reason. Apple and other big techs are indeed dominant in some very specific ecosystems for now. But it's highly unlikely that this situation will hold forever. The explanation for this spate of populist, bipartisan antitrust actions relies not on actual monopoly concerns, but rather on political agendas to expand control over American businesses. If Apple does harm its consumers, it's up to them, not the government, to say.
The nerds think that there's a 48% chance that Apple will allow sideloading or other app stores on their iPhones in the U.S. before 2026. And that's according to the Metaculous prediction community.
See, Adam, that's the problem with technology and phones. That's why I use a tin can with a string on it to talk to anybody.
Do you have, like, a friends and family strings attached?
Yeah, it's the no strings attached, strings attached plan. Yeah!
According to a U.S. admiral, China is ready to invade Taiwan by 2027. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Forbes, Bloomberg, Business Insider, Nikkei Asia, Focus Taiwan, and Washington Examiner. Admiral John Aquilino, the head of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, Wednesday warned that China could be ready to invade Taiwan to unite the self-governing island with the mainland by 2027. In prepared testimony to the House Armed Services Committee, Aquilino claimed that all indications point to the Chinese military meeting President Xi Jinping's alleged preferred timeline to annex Taiwan. He further said that China is expanding its military at a rate, quote, not seen since World War II, adding that the People's Liberation Army expanded its arsenal by more than 400 fighter aircraft and 20 warships while doubling its missile inventory within 3 years. This comes as Taiwan's Foreign Minister Joseph Wu accused Beijing of constructing so-called enormous military bases on three islands around Taiwan's main holding in the disputed South China Sea, an islet in the Spratly Islands that Taipei refers to as Taiping. When asked whether it's true that the U.S. troops were permanently deployed in Taiwan's remote Kinmen Island to train Taiwanese troops, Aquilino refuted recent news reports, telling the committee there's no permanent stationing of U.S. forces there. Addressing relations between China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, Aquilino warned of an emerging axis of evil and called on Washington to act accordingly.
Those were the facts. These are the spins, starting with a pro-establishment narrative from Voice of America. This is the latest reminder that Beijing is serious about annexing Taiwan by military force if necessary. Furthermore, the deepening ties between China and the authoritarian regimes in the region are clear evidence that developments in Europe and the Indo-Pacific are increasingly intertwined. To protect the rules-based international order, the U.S. and its allies must prepare military for this rising threat.
The Global Times have prepared the establishment critical narrative. The U.S. alarmism is baseless and only serves to maintain the Chinese threat narrative and distract from America's hostile foreign policy and its military buildup in Taiwan. Washington's militaristic zero-sum mentality also extends to countries that pose no threat to the world, but rattle Washington's crumbling hegemony. The U.S. must abandon its irrational path, adhere to the One China principle, and stop meddling in China's international affairs.
And there's another nerd narrative from Metaculous saying there's a 61% chance that the U.S. will react with military force if China invades Taiwan before January 1st, 2035. Portugal nominates Montenegro as the next prime minister. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Guardian, Barron's, the Associated Press, and the Portugal Resident. The leader of Portugal's Democratic Alliance Coalition, or AD, Luís Montenegro, has been nominated to be the country's next prime minister. This follows the country's parliamentary election, in which the AD won 80 seats, the Socialists 78, and the rightist Chega Party 50. Montenegro became head of the Center-Right Socialist Democratic Party, or PSD, the largest party in the AD, in 2022, after the Socialists won a majority in January that year. Prime Minister António Costa announced his resignation last November over corruption allegations, resulting in the AD's win in the March 10 election. He began his political career as a local councillor in Espinho, leading the PSD's parliamentary group from 2011 to 2015. He failed to become the party leader in 2020 after leaving parliament in 2018. Montenegro, invited by President Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa to be prime minister, is set to assume duties on April 2. If Portugal's parliament successfully passes a vote of no confidence, a new leader will be invited to run. Montenegro said he will not form a coalition with Chega. Socialist leader Pedro Nuno Santos has promised to be a stable, strong, and solid opposition, while also being open to agreements. Before leaving office, outgoing Prime Minister Costa is set to hold meetings with EU officials over the next few days, including Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, and European Parliament President Roberta Metsola. His future endeavors are unknown.
Thanks for the facts, Melissa. The left narrative on this story is going to be provided by El País. The recent scandals among a few socialists and Democrats have unfortunately stained the reputation of Portugal's moderate faction. While this has given Chega historic growth in parliamentary seats, the majority of the country is still eager to keep the far right out of power. With a fresh face leading the centrist coalition, the long-standing Socialist Party and its democratic counterparts have an opportunity to regain public trust and maintain ties with the EU, an integral part of the country's economy that Chega hopes to destroy.
Here's the right narrative from the European Conservative. Portugal's mainstream may have control for a little longer, but the future is with Chega. Chega's support jumped from 7% to 18%, largely thanks to young voters, one-third of whom have left the country due to dire economic prospects. Portugal's failed economic redistribution policies have only remained thanks to billions of subsidies from Brussels. Currently, young people can only obtain low-wage jobs in the tourism sector, so unless the socialists decide to stop being socialist, Chega's popularity will only grow.
Well, the nerds think that there's only a 10% chance that any member state will leave the Eurozone before 2030. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Blurp.
Blip, blap, blurp. In a recent report, U.S. is considering a plea deal offer for Julian Assange. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Guardian, Wall Street Journal, Reuters, New York Post, and Intelligencer. The U.S. Department of Justice, or the DOJ, is reportedly considering a plea deal with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to admit to a misdemeanor charge of mishandling classified documents rather than the 18 counts of espionage he currently faces, which carry up to 175 years in prison. WikiLeaks published thousands of classified U.S. military information and diplomatic cables around 2010. That allegedly exposed American war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange's lawyers argue he was given information and published it as a journalist. According to sources for the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. and Assange's lawyers have discussed a plea deal for months. If such an agreement were reached, Assange would reportedly be able to sign it from the U.K. and be released soon after. Assange's lawyer, however, said the U.S. is still seeking extradition and the DOJ has given no indication that it wants to resolve the case. He also stated that it would be inappropriate to comment while his case is before the U.K. High Court. The WikiLeaks founder first sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London in 2012, after which he was arrested by U.K. authorities in 2019 after losing his Ecuadorian asylum status. He has been in a U.K. prison ever since. In his final plea to avoid extradition last month, Assange cited bad health and fears of suicide in American prison. British judges will rule whether Assange can appeal to be extradited within 28 days. If extradited, the U.S. has promised Australia that Assange could serve his term there.
Thank you, Adam, for the facts. Here are the spins with a pro-establishment narrative from PBS NewsHour. Assange did not innocently receive information and then publish it. He encouraged a U.S. intelligence officer to steal classified material for him to broadcast to the world. Not only that, but the material he released included the names of people in war zones, effectively putting their lives in danger. As would be the case for any other alleged spy, the government, through the collection of evidence, has found that Assange blatantly put American security at risk.
The nation's going to counter that with the establishment critical narrative. Whether Assange is extradited and prosecuted or given a plea deal, the fact of the matter is that the U.S. government has not only tried to arrest him but also kill him throughout his entire process, It's now known that the CIA in 2017 drew up a plan to murder Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy. When that failed, they went to Plan B, which was to let his health deteriorate in a UK prison. Without ever using American handcuffs, the US government has destroyed the physical and mental health of a heroic journalist.
And here's the nerd narrative from Metaculus. This one says there's a 50% chance Julian Assange will not be extradited to the U.S. after January 1st, 2025. Reddit goes public and lists shares on the New York Stock Exchange. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Associated Press, CNBC, The Guardian, BBC News, and Yahoo Finance. Reddit shares hit the New York Stock Exchange on Thursday as the social media company launched its highly anticipated initial public offering under the ticket RDDT. The company set its IPO price on Wednesday at the high end of its $31 to $34 per share range, and Reddit sold 15.28 million shares at its $34 price, while existing shareholders sold another 6.72 million. Reddit shares opened on Thursday 48% above the company's $34 IPO at $47 per share, marking an $8.87 billion valuation, while the IPO valued the company at $6.4 billion. RDDT peaked at 70% above its debut price, reaching $57.80 per share for a $10.90 market cap. While the IPO's valuation was below the $10 billion set by investors during a private funding round in 2021, it still had the largest IPO by a social media company in years. It also comes as the platform looks to become profitable after losing $90.8 million in 2023. Capitalizing on its 73 million monthly users and its partnership with Google, the company hopes its $200 million in licensing deals for AI models will bring it into a new era of prosperity. However, the Federal Trade Commission announced an inquiry into Reddit's AI licensing deals. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman is one of Reddit's largest shareholders, and the company was founded in 2005 by CEO Sam Huffman and Alexis Ohanian. Reddit has been at the forefront of many trends, including the meme stocks age, and it reserved 1.76 million IPO shares for loyal users to buy.
Thanks, Melissa. The spins are going to start with the narrative A provided by Guardian. For nearly two decades, Reddit has been home to millions of people seeking open information and discussion about any and all topics imaginable. However, all of that could change as Reddit goes public and faces the threat of becoming like all other corporatized social media companies. While there's a need for some content moderation, it's easy to envision Reddit overloading on censorship to appease shareholders and regulators. If that happens, the beloved platform will become no different from its over-sanitized competitors.
And here's narrative B from the New York Times. Reddit has reached a new status as a company with its IPO, as it goes from a platform of misinformation and vulgarity to a multi-billion dollar tech giant. However, Reddit finally decided to clean up its website and purge forums of overt racism and misogyny, and the results speak for themselves. By moderating inappropriate and hateful content, Reddit was able to attract more users and, more importantly, investors. Reddit's success shows the importance of content moderation, and more companies should follow suit.
Sullivan has been hired to run consumer AI for Microsoft. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Reuters, X, BBC News, and Associated Press. Mustafa Sullivan, who's co-founder of Google's DeepMind Artificial Intelligence Lab and was most recently the head of the startup Inflection AI, was hired on Tuesday as Chief Executive Officer of Microsoft AI. Another Inflection AI co-founder, Karen Simonian, will serve as Microsoft AI's Chief Scientist and will be one of several other employees from the startup moving to a new division of Microsoft that brings all of its consumer AI products, including the Copilot chatbot and the new Bing browser, under one roof. In a post on X, Sullivan promised Inflection AI will continue on its mission to make API widely available to developers and businesses around the world while under a different company's chief executive. Suliman left Google in 2022 to co-found Inflection AI, which raised $1.3 billion from Microsoft and NVIDIA last June to stake out a strong position in the generative AI race. Meanwhile, Microsoft continues to bolster its position in the AI race with this move, as well as its investments in ChatGPT maker OpenAI and Mistral, a French AI startup.
Thank you for those facts, Adam. Here are the spins, beginning with Narrative A from TechCrunch. After failing to completely take over OpenAI, Microsoft has now used its financial might to gut Inflection AI in an attempt to conquer the generative AI world. Time will tell if the tech behemoth is a positive actor looking to responsibly develop advanced AI technologies, or if it will act as a monopoly with little regard for the effects on the world.
The Guardian's going to continue the spin with a Narrative B. Microsoft is the leader in the generative AI race, and this move will help keep the company out in front. With Suliman on board, there's no looking back. His well-publicized concerns about AI safety will make sure Microsoft accelerates the development of the technology responsibly.
And the nerds from Metaculus are at it again. This time there's a 90% chance that the U.S. will have passed legislation that requires cybersecurity around AI models before January 1st, 2030. You know, I was thinking for this spring I would just start a monopoly.
Like your own type of behemoth company that just engulfs everything and all of their businesses around it? Or are you talking about you're making your own board game?
Like, duh, Adam, like what's hot right now is now it's starting a giant tech company and taking over the world and making sure that you eat your competitors.
I think it might be easier to start a board game.
I think starting a tech monopoly would actually take less time than playing the board game Monopoly. That's a long game. The U.S. announces stricter vehicle emission standards. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Bloomberg, CBS, The Verge, Washington Post, Al Jazeera, and The New York Times. The Biden administration Wednesday imposed what the Environmental Protection Agency called its strongest ever vehicle pollution norms in an effort to hasten carmakers' transitions to zero-emission vehicles. The standards will apply to car and light-duty truck models produced in 2027 to 2032. The EPA estimates they will save consumers nearly $46 billion in annual fuel costs and nearly $16 billion in maintenance through 2055. The new norms aim to halve emissions by 2032, but they're not as strict as the ones proposed last year. The earlier ones opposed by carmakers and worker unions sought to cut emissions by more than two-thirds. The EPA estimates the norms will cut emissions by 7.2 billion metric tons through 2055, alongside fine particulate matter and nitrogen oxides, preventing up to 2,500 premature deaths due to pollution. The standards could lead to more than half of new cars being EVs in 2030 to 32. Since transportation is the top U.S. emitter, EPA Chief Michael Regan said the rules would solidify the U.S.'s role as a leader in clean transportation. While a record 1.2 million EVs were sold in the U.S. last year, they constituted 7.6% of total car sales.
Thank you, Melissa. The Democratic narrative for this story is brought to us by Carbon Brief. Biden is successfully striking a balance between giving hybrid vehicles a bigger opportunity and balancing climate goals with industry capabilities and consumer choice. Although these standards are less stringent than the ones originally proposed, they offer flexibility and acknowledge the challenges automakers face.
Here's the Republican narrative from the Wall Street Journal. In attempting to end the era of gas-powered cars, Biden is willing to burden middle-class consumers and damage the U.S. auto industry by subsidizing EVs for those wealthy enough to afford them. Moreover, there are still unanswered questions about the environmental impact of battery production and electricity generation. This is a bad policy.
There's another spin. It's a progressive narrative, and it's brought to us by the LA Times. These new rules are inadequate to tackle the climate crisis. They're too gradual, and there are loopholes that favor automakers. Delaying steep EV sales growth until 2030 is a mistake amid urgent climate concerns and smells like concessions made to the auto industry and organized labor, which values jobs and profits over protecting the environment.
And here's another nerd narrative from Metaculus. This one says there's a 50% chance that 31% of new vehicle production will be electric in the U.S. in 2027.
A recent study states that global fertility rates will plunge by the year 2100. Here are the facts as agreed upon by El País, The Telegraph, CNN, Eureka Alert, Newsweek, and Al Jazeera. According to a study published in The Lancet on Wednesday, 198 of 204 countries, or 97.1%, by the year 2100 will not have high enough fertility rates to sustain their respective population sizes. Researchers from the University of Washington estimate that the global fertility rate, which has fallen from 4.84 children per woman in 1950 to 2.23 in 2021, will drop 1.59 by the end of this century. Though the researchers predict fertility rates will be declining globally, the rate of decline will reportedly be uneven, which they claim will create a demographically divided world. Countries need a total fertility rate of 2.1 children per woman to prevent their population from declining. In South Korea and Serbia, the rate is less than 1.1, while in Chad, it's 7, the highest in the world. Only Chad, Niger, Samoa, Somalia, Tajikistan, and Tonga are expected to have fertility rates exceeding 2.1 births per woman by 2100, while the rate could decrease from around 1.5 to 1.37 in Western Europe. Due to the so-called baby boom and so-called baby bust divide, the researchers forecast that low-income regions could find it difficult to support their growing populations, while high-income countries may struggle to maintain economic growth.
Thanks for those interesting facts, Adam. Here are the spins, starting with narrative A from Health Data. Nations of varying demographics and economic ranks will not be able to avoid the consequences if these trends are allowed to continue. Lower-income countries must offer better access to contraceptives and female education, and wealthier nations must prioritize policies that support a robust social security system and open immigration to maintain population size and economic growth. Otherwise, the world will be in deep trouble.
Euro News is going to continue this spin with a narrative B. Lower fertility rates don't pose an existential threat to the planet because a shrinking population could alleviate strain on global resources and reduce carbon emissions. These studies tend to over-sensationalize the socioeconomic consequences of slow fertility rates, which can lead to more restrictions on women's rights to contraception and to pursue education and work over having a family. There's no fertility crisis just yet.
And the nerds have the last word, with Metaculus predicting there's a 50% chance that it would take at least 1.38 thousand years to recover the population above 1 billion again if the human population declines to fewer than 100 million.
How many children do you have, Melissa?
I have two.
You have two?
Yeah, so I'm right on track.
Right on track. I've got 3.3.
You do?
Yeah, one of them I'm not quite sure about.
Thank you for listening to the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 22nd, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
For more information on Verity, visit our website, verity.news, or download our app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Melissa Topshire, inviting you to join us next time on Verity.